sure hope you're hungry. Ooh, I'm starving. Wash those hands, pull up a chair, and secure that feed bag. Because it's time to listen to Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss attempt to use human language to converse with and pick the brains of other developers. I thought there was going to be food. So buckle up and grab that O-shit handle, because this ride is going to get wild. This is the Syntax Supper Club.
Welcome to Syntax in this Friday Supper Club, the Syntax Supper Club. It's our new series that we'll be doing on Friday, interviewing some of the coolest people on the web. We have an amazing guest today, Jared Palmer of Turbo Repo, amongst many other things. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, Colorado. With me, as always, is Wes Boss. How's it going, everybody? Wes?
I'm doing great. Excited to talk about Turbo Repo a little bit. I had a little call with Jared a couple weeks ago and just opened my eyes to all the awesome stuff. So I'm excited to share that with everybody else.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really great because I'm definitely playing a little bit more of a less informed role. You'll be playing a little bit more of an informed role. And then, of course, Jared is going to be the expert here. So I think it's going to be really great.
I don't know about that.
Cool. So let's get going here. I know Wes has crafted a short list of questions, but Wes, do you want to start off with whatever you think is the best question to ask first?
Yeah. So I talked about mono repos, I don't know, maybe 3 months ago. It's when I moved my course platform over to mono repo. Because I have like a back end, and then we have an admin dashboard, and we have an API, and like there's a whole parcel thing to compile all the React and all the CSS and all that stuff, and took a look at Turbo Repo, and we thought, okay, this looks like a good approach forward, and implemented it. So excited to have Jared on just to talk about it. So do you want to give us a quick rundown of what Turbo Repo is, and then we'll dive into some more bigger questions?
Sure. So Turbo Repo is an open source project, part of Vercel. It's a build system that abstracts the techniques and complex configuration needed for most modern TypeScript and JavaScript mono repos into a single cohesive lightweight build system. So the idea is you give enterprises or even solo developers a world-class development experience without this massive maintenance cost. And it uses techniques that were pioneered by large companies such as Google and Meta, but it makes these techniques available to the masses and solves the problem with a lot of versatility, getting customers, developers as close to zero configuration as possible. And so that's my little spiel on what is Turbo Repo.
So like, let's answer the question of like what it is and what it isn't right off the bat, because I think people listening right now are being like, okay, like, is it a Webpack alternative? Is it an NPM alternative? Does it replace Parcel?
Yeah. So it does none of those things.
Okay.
it does none of those things. I'll tell you the backstory. I'll tell you where Turbo fits into your stack.
Yeah.
So the backstory is,
I have a question in here, sorry, that literally says, how does this fit into my stack? So
yes, there you go.
Yes. So one of my open source projects is called TSDX. And this is, if Next.js is like a meta framework for building websites, then TSDX is like a meta framework for TypeScript NPM packages. It actually came out of Formic, my forms from a form library. It's sort of like build and roll up setup. Like it's just in roll-up setup. And I was like, wow, Formic's got a great development experience right now. What if I could just have this experience for all my other projects?
Yeah.
And so TSDX was born, which is TypeScript and roll-up and Jest and ESLint and all that abstract into a nice CLI. And you go like TSDX create package and boom, you've got this awesome setup ready to go. But there was an issue that someone raised for monorepo support. And initially, this wasn't in scope for TSDX because Formic was just a single React package.
Yeah.
But now it's more than that. And I also started working on other monorepos, mostly powered by Lerna and Yarn workspaces at the time. And I'd been working on a couple of applications both closed source and open source too, that had the same setup. And it just seemed like there was momentum here to kind of figure out what TSDX would feel like for monorepos, or at least this architecture, right? Even if it was a single application, just having this like multi-package development experience seemed like something that made a lot of sense, especially as code bases got larger and larger and more people started working on these projects. So that's what Turbo is, or it started out as. And when I went to go do that, I started looking at Lerna's source code and I started looking at a bunch of alternatives. And I asked myself, well, what's the right way to do this? And I went down this deep, dark rabbit hole of build systems and and learned how the biggest code bases on the planet work and how they deploy and how they build and test their code. And it's vastly different is what I found from the way that most front-end teams build, test, and ship their code.
You're talking about like Google, Netflix, things like that?
Yeah, exactly. So Google has a tool internally called Blaze, which is externally, it's open source and called Bazel, but it's a little different. And it helps Google build their multi-billion line code base. Facebook has a similar tool called Buck. They all have great names, by the way. Like, they all have great names. Twitter has one called Pants. Arguably the best name.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think that team actually split out. So you got Buck, you got Bazel, you got Pants. There's another one called Please. I mean, this is great.
Some of the highest paid people in the industry.
Yeah, just like great names. But what are these projects doing? So what these projects are doing is they're creating, to get technical for a second, what they're creating is a directed acyclic graph, a DAG, of tasks and running those tasks in some dependency first order, or commonly called in like graph speak, topological order. It's just like do the dependencies first, right? And they're very good at this. They're like, this is like very well understood. And they do this with obscene amounts of speed and complexity. And Bazel and Buck really are very useful for compiled languages like C++ or Java, even Python or Go, and really haven't made their way into the front end space for a couple of reasons. The number one being NPM is a little different and weird compared to other like language ecosystems and such. And JavaScript really has only become a compiled language and like very recently. So it's just new, right? This concept of, compiling TypeScript or even Babel and stuff to plain JS, right? This is just new. So all of a sudden you have these forces at play here. And because of how the JavaScript ecosystem has evolved with workspaces, these tools like don't exactly work that great. They work. If someone's going to, listen about it, be like, there is Bazel rules Node.js. And yes, it's possible. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But you also need to configure Bazel with Skylark, which is a subset of Python. Fun times.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So the average dev just doesn't have this covered, in my opinion. Compared to the flexibility and ease of the rest of the front end stack, this part of it isn't as evolved, if that makes sense. And so Google is a team of 100 that works on Blaze. The average team doesn't have this. Now, the techniques, though, and this is the key part, that they're using are awesome. And the goal of Turbo is to bring as many of those techniques to the average solo dev, small team, big team, whatever, to the masses as possible in the like fewest lines of code as possible. So designed to be incrementally adopted. And those techniques, sorry to ramble a bit, biggest one is remote caching. And what this does is Turbo will analyze your code base. Each and every package.json script in your code base is the atomic unit of Turbo. So that's where it really fits into your stack, running scripts, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That was the place we had to get started first. Before we got to TSDX and presets and stuff, we had to get tasks running, rocking. And so that's what Turbo does. It runs tasks. It's an orchestrator at the moment. And
that's what I called it. At the very basic, if you've ever had to run two NPM scripts at the exact same time, that's hard. At the very basic, Turbo does an awesome job at doing things in parallel. Yeah.
So what Turbo does is it creates this directed acyclic graph out of, which is a fancy term for, it understands your dependencies and your tasks. And it runs stuff in order. It can run stuff in parallel. And not only does it run stuff, just run your tasks better, it can remember which tasks you've run before. Mm-hmm. Key insight. And when it does this, it actually remembers not just the task, but the output of the task. So if you run Next.js build, you run next build, it outputs to the .next directory, right? All this, you know, it transpiles your JavaScript, your CSS, it pre-processes all this stuff, right? Does all this magic. So instead of just like redoing that every single time when you run next build, what Turbo can do is it can say, oh, next build, that outputs to the .next directory. And for this state of the code base, let's mark this with a fingerprint, what we call a hash.
Yeah.
And then Turbo stores that fingerprint with its outputs and its logs. And it does. And then when you run that task again, instead of you redoing all of the work, Turbo can do the calculation, say, oh, we've been here before. Look, there's a matching fingerprint in our cache. Cool. Let's move that into the correct position into the .next folder. And like either that's it or move on to the next task we have to do in your pipeline of stuff. And so this technique is very, very powerful because not only can your cache live on your machine and you can remember the tasks that you've already done before, but you can go into multiplayer mode and actually sync that cache among your CI and your other teammates. So if you or your team or your CI has ever executed a task, you can then share the results and skip the amount, the recomputation. Mm-hmm. Very, very powerful. So that's overall this technique of caching and incremental task running and scheduling, as we call it, can save devs roughly 50 to 85% of compute time.
Oh, wow.
That's, awesome. Yeah, because like even my platform, so we put Turbo Repo on at a very basic level to understand how it works, is that like if I'm running a build and I didn't change my CSS, but I did change my JavaScript, there's no sense in rerunning the CSS build as part of my deployment platform or even as part of like your development. Like so we've all had that where you have to sort of sit on your hands and wait for that initial build to get going. And in my case, it just took a couple of minutes off the build, but that was huge for me. And
that's like, huge, right? The difference between 30 seconds, like deploying, we get this a lot, like, well, my deploys are 5 minutes, right? And that's great. What if they were 30 seconds?
Yeah. Please. Yeah, that I would love that. When we had our call earlier, we were joking how like I used to just rsync everything up and restart the process.
And that was
10 second deploys, you know, and or the FTP drag and drop your PHP file and you refresh the page and that sucker is deployed. And now we're at a spot where like you've obviously talked to people that are in larger companies. Are the deploys like, can they get into like 30 minutes or even more?
Oh, yeah. That's where I got the idea to start the company of Turbo. So what I would happen is I get these calls. I found out after I tweeted about it initially, I immediately got a DM from the team at a very, very like tier one tech company, a couple banks. And I kept hearing the same story over and over again. And really it boils down to sort of two user subsets. Either you've got a team that is working on a design system and they need a learner replacement, like an orchestration replacement. They just want faster, better design system. They want workflow there. And it's likely a smaller team. It's a team inside of a company. It's one monorepo inside of a company that maybe has multiple monorepos. That's I'd say like some set of the 20-30% of the user base. Mm-hmm. The other are folks that are building apps. Or like CLIs or like full monorepos. And those teams find themselves in a very tough position as they scale to 20, 30, 40 devs and beyond. And the situation they find themselves in is their deploys start taking longer and longer and longer. And they get to that 30-minute situation rather quickly. And because of how these incremental tools and other build tools haven't become popular, they're still on, you know, workspaces, Yarn, PNPM, EdPM workspaces. And they're installing all of their dependencies on every single build. And they're running all of their tasks on every single build. There's no caching. There's no fingerprinting. There's no remote caching. They're really struggling. And then they're looking at this decision where they either need to adopt one of these tools like Bazel or Buck, which, by the way, put significant constraints onto your code base. And it's not an easy like migration to. It's mm-hmm. it's quite difficult, actually. And you need that they're like that. There are Bazel consultancies, by the way, that's sole job is to just like help teams move. And even if you do that, by the way, the complexity and maintenance is material because these things are, you know, you maybe do things a little bit differently. So these teams are finding themselves, well, I either need to hire these Bazel consultants or I need to like build this in house. And so there was an opportunity to come to the market with Turbo, which is this end to end solution that you could slap on in like a day and give as near to or significant value in a very, very, very short amount of time that would take their builds and you know, put them back into the 15-minute range or 10-minute range, which is tolerable.
Totally. All right, let's take a quick minute to talk about one of our sponsors today, which is Whiskey Web and Whatnot. Now, Whiskey Web and Whatnot is it's a different kind of podcast. It's lighter, it's fun, and it gets to showcase some of the more human side of web developers. Now, this is one of my favorite things about certain types of podcasts, where you get to know the people, you get to understand them as human beings rather than just people smashing their fingers on a keyboard. Not to mention, there is Whiskey and Whatnot as well. So it's not just web and whatnot. It's not just Whiskey and Web. It's Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot. Past guests include Tom Preston Warner, Kenzie Dodds, Charlie Gerard, and of course, the US boss. Hey, what we got to get me on there. I got a Whiskey Web and Whatnot. Hit me up, right? On Whiskey Web and Whatnot, they discuss all sorts of things from everything from Next.js and TypeScript to Chuck's past life as a blackjack dealer, Cincinnati chili and the best casseroles, and of course, whiskey. So check it out at whiskeywebandwhatnot.fm or go ahead and just look for it in your podcast player. It will be there. We'll also have a link in the show notes. So check it out. Whiskey Web and Whatnot. Thanks so much for sponsoring this episode. Let's talk a little bit about like actual real world usage, adding it to a project that exists. I mean, let's say you do have a package that's or a monorepo that's currently using workspaces, any of the flavors of workspaces, so to say. What's the cost of adding Turbo Repo to something like that? Not like monetary cost, obviously, but time cost. What are we looking at to add this to a project that's already utilizing some kind of workspace?
Depending, it really will depend on the workspace setup, but it's possible that it would be in less time than it took you to ask the question.
But, nice. Love to hear that.
So, but I will say that's, it will work that way to get peak eight. Will that cut your, you know, builds by 85% over the course of the month? My guess is probably you'll need to do a little bit of movement of things. Mostly Turbo likes it to hit those high cash hit rates that I just described or that are, that result in faster and faster incremental builds. You want to move things into packages. And you want to move dependencies kind of out of the root, or I shouldn't say out of the root. You just want to make sure that things are well-defined and encapsulated in packages. And also note that just because you have more packages doesn't mean that your caching is going to be the silver bullet. The shape of your dependency graph actually does matter. So if you have all of these packages, I'll give an example like this. Pretend you have like a monolithic Node.js app, like classic templates, handlebars, right? And you split that into two Node.js apps. And they always build together. Every single time you change one, you always have to build the other. Splitting them didn't do anything to your build time, right? Mm-hmm. It may solve organizational issues, which are valid and absolutely need to happen, but it was not going to make your build time any faster, right? So the same is true, you know, with that. Just because you split things into packages doesn't mean it's going to be faster, especially if they all culminate in one final build. So there's still benefits of Turbo though around like orchestration and standardization that may be worthwhile. But if we're talking about pure build speed alone, you do need to have like a graph that has sort of that will benefit from caching, right? So oftentimes that means the graph has like different leafs.
Yeah. One relies on this one. Everything relies on each other.
Right. And so if it's just a straight line, where everything does rely on each other. Yes, it could help, right? You just start later down in that line, but it really shines where you've got this like, oh, I've got the doc site and the, like Wes, in your app where it's like, we've got the admin panel, right? And when don't touch the admin panel, we do not need to deploy and redeploy the admin panel or touch that, right? Like it doesn't make any sense. So that's where it really can shine, where you have multiple sort of projects in one, in one repo. And then that's in that case, we're talking like a day and a half. But you can literally start using Turbo on one task in your mono repo, like just get lint going or type checking going in minutes.
Yeah, my config is 40, 50 lines. And you're simply just, and at least in my case, I'm just telling it what the tasks are, dev, build, start, test, lint. And then you say which one depends on which. So like my start depends on build. And that's beautiful because you can just run Turbo start and it knows that it has to run the build first. So you don't have to like orchestrate it. It orchestrates it for you. But then you also tell it what your inputs and outputs are. So like my inputs are my React components and my CSS files, and my outputs are the next directory, a dist directory from my parcel builds. And that's what I thought was really cool, is that like I didn't have to find a plugin for Turbo. I just told it which are the folders that come in and which are the folders that come out. And like you said, there's some magic in it where it will fingerprint it and figure out what it needs to rerun, right?
Yeah, exactly. The inputs are a new addition that we just added, which actually really helped, because if you change like the README or something, you don't change a test, why are you going to rerun tests? Or only if you change them, it's like source code related.
And even you even told me that you can rely on environmental variables changing as well, which is pretty nifty.
Yep. So that's like super helpful.
API key changes in your environmental variable, your code didn't change, but the environmental variables did. So you would obviously have to rerun it because that's being inlined in like a template or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So if in the case where a lot of these modern meta frameworks, like Next.js, for example, will inline your environment variables that start with next_public_.
Yeah.
And so you need to be careful in this situation, because with Turbo, you want to, because of the way that caching works, you want to keep your builds pure. And what I mean by pure is the inputs yield consistent and outputs. So for the same state of the code base, you get the same output.
So just like a pure function in JavaScript, right?
Yeah. Exactly the same concept. No side effects. But let's be careful what is a side effect. So that being said, like if you think about a static site with static site generation, that's actually a side effect, right? Because depending on when you run, if you're pulling from like Contentful or like one of these headless CMSs, and you're generating static content, depending on when you run that build for the same state of the code base could yield different outputs. So SSG from an external CMS is actually an impure build. It's impossible to cache. I mean, you could try to do some hacks and stuff but there is something data fetching that's happening that is a side effect, and so it's not cacheable. But assuming your builds are pure, the only thing you need to then care about is, are you inlining environment variables? And that would make them impure. So the way you handle that is by declaring them as dependencies in Turbo. And Turbo is like, makes that pretty straightforward. And then it can use that in its fingerprint calculation to make sure that for the same set of environment variables, you're only going to ship the same set of environment variables and code.
So this works with, like, this doesn't replace how you define what your workspaces are, does it? Like, I'm using it with PNPM, and I'm still using PNPM workspaces. You can use it Yarn, NPM, right? Like, you've figured out how to make it work with all three of those.
Correct. Yeah, so Turbo is not trying to reinvent that part of the wheel, if that makes sense. I'm all about, from my experience with Formic, I'm all about building tools that can be incrementally adopted, and I think that's very Reacty, right? React was always this incrementally adoptable thing. And I think that's super important for adoption. And so, Turbo just works with all workspaces. And soon, very soon, even non-workspaces.
Oh, cool.
Just regular projects. Yeah.
Awesome. And the sharing of the cache. So how do you do that? Is that why Vercel, like we didn't even say it, Vercel bought Turbo, right? And now you were saying earlier you've got a huge team and you're working on all kinds of crazy ideas. So you would need an external service to share that, right?
Yeah. So the cache lives locally on your machine in a folder, and the cache is content addressable, and so that means that it's basically hash based, and so you can use a service that Vercel provides called remote caching, to host that cache to you and your team and stuff. And you know, there are some open source community caches, but it's super easy to just, Vercel's cache is super easy to use. You just, it's also the default in Turbo repo. So if you run NPX Turbo login and you have a Vercel account, or if you don't have a Vercel account, you can sign up for one right there. You're like three clicks away from getting remote caching set up. And then you can run NPX Turbo link to link it to your correct account on Vercel. And then immediately you have this like Dropbox almost for your cache.
Your cache.
And the rest of your team can benefit from that.
So like what, I'm just trying to think of like what kinds of things are probably cached, like tests, obviously, like CSS tests. Generation, JavaScript. Mm-hmm. But like could you do anything like images, videos?
Yeah. Anything
machine learning. System. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why not? The sort of trick to it is you could rewrite logs to disk to the file system. And so even if there's any other file system artifact, I'll call it, that's emitted from a task.
Yeah.
Turbo doesn't even know or care about the difference. So it just will cache the logs. Actually there's one team that saves like days. No, they saved over 60 days. A team of 10 saved over 60 days of TypeScript type checking time in the month of March.
Oh my gosh.
That's insane.
And because I knew this because we look at like the median log size, and their median log size was like 3 bytes because it was like type check. It was like just 2 lines of type check of the like whatever it says when TypeScript's type checking. So you can do type checking, you could do video images, you could do ML models, you can do video encoding.
Man.
You know, whatever you want, as long as you keep them pure and adhere to the rules. You can even use Turbo with infrastructure as code providers. So you can use Turbo with like the AWS CDK. Or I guess Terraform, or even like Terraform or Pulumi.
What's that?
So you could like incrementally, if you like, basically you could deploy your AWS infrastructure incrementally only if it's changed.
Oh, infrastructure. Yeah. Like you have a config file that defines what your infrastructure is.
Correct. And if that's changed, only read to do that. Yeah. Reapply it or whatever it is. Actually, that's one of the first use cases. It was somebody from AWS, Michael Edelman, actually started doing that. And it was super interesting to hear him do that. I did not intend Turbo to be incremental infrastructure as code coordination orchestration tool, but lo and behold, there's some uses there.
I think I need to get this set up. Like, have you talked to the folks from Gatsby? At all about their like Gatsby images ever? Because then like that was a huge pain point of mine where the Gatsby would cache the images, but like when you had to like redo it, or if I had them on my computer, but then I deployed to Netlify, there's no shared cache there. So there, I would have to sometimes wait like 25 minutes to regen all the images on my site. Have you talked to them at all about that? Or just generally something that they could use.
No, I mean, that's the benefit of like remote caching ideally solves that part of it. But sub process caching and stuff like that. We are working with the Next.js and Svelte teams because they're at Vercel on these kinds of things. We're working with the Next.js and Svelte teams on this kind of stuff. How do we share caches both in, you know, for build, but also maybe even for dev? And like, how does that work, right? With all these, with all this processing and stuff. But yeah, it would be cool to, one of the ideas would be like, okay, if you are image processing locally, like, do you really need to rerun that?
So one thing I'm wondering here, so I have a PNPM mono repo that's several SvelteKit packages, right? Anytime we make any sort of library, internal, external, we make it into its own SvelteKit package. But the pain in the workflow right now comes from, if I'm working in a package, I want my root repo to either wait for that package to complete before recompiling, or what's happening right now is everything fights for a little bit and then you hit a couple of refreshes and eventually it's fine if you're rebuilding the package and you're running the main site. So theoretically, is this something that Turbo Repo would step in to help orchestrate to say, all right, you package, then you go. You package, then you go. Or can it not get in the way of even like rerunning compiles or anything like that? Or is this essentially a feature that Turbo Repo would be able to step in and assist with?
Eventually, yes. I can tell you there are pain points that exist with like locking and stuff that will make that a little bit more annoying than it should be. Turbo, to be fair, was really designed for CI at first. I was really, in addition to the TSDX story, I was also very frustrated with waiting for some Fargate deploys that I could not. And when you deploy to Fargate, AWS's container service, it just takes like minutes and there's nothing you can do about it. And I was very frustrated that, so Turbo was very much designed to like make sure that I didn't have to deploy to Fargate when I made a change. And so it was super CI focused and I wasn't really focused too much on local dev. But that being said, it is something we are really going to be looking at this summer. And so making a local dev experience awesome is something that is 1000% on the roadmap.
I noticed that like just about a lot of the things you make comes from personal needs. And I think that's like a big interesting aspect of all of the things you're making, right? Whether it's TSDX came out of the fact that Formic had built this, you know, this structure essentially to be very organized in its process. And then that leads to essentially where you're at now. Is that always something that has been prominent in your career or the types of projects you choose? Is it usually just solving your own problems?
Yeah, I mean, I think combined also with understanding and being able to recognize that relationship, oh, this is a problem I have, but my guess is it's also a problem for a lot of other people because if I'm having it, then I guess other people are having it. And that part is not, that part takes like, I mean, I now I'm a little bit more experienced. I've done it a couple more times. But yeah, it's all been, even Formic was, we were working on a large dashboard at my agency that I used to run. And we were, the problem there was we were pretty sure that, well, we weren't using Redux. So Redux form was out of the question. And then we looked at all this like schema based form libraries that existed in it too. That didn't seem, we had just so much complexity. It didn't make sense. So it seemed and so, yeah, I'd say it mostly out of my own, like scratching my own itch has been always like very useful. I think also though now with these with this problem space, at least, there's also an aspect of it of just seeing where there's an acute pain point in the community. And I think that is both my itch, but then also, I guess, everybody else's itch, if that makes sense.
Totally. And it's funny because I end up having so many of the same problems as you've come across here. I've made a Svelte form library for myself. At one point, I was working on a task orchestrator that I was calling Avalanche, oddly enough. But I did so with just like total dumb guy's viewpoint on it because I was just like, oh, I need to run this script and this script, just, you know, sync up a bunch of node scripts to try to solve these problems. So it's funny that you seem to have a good eye for identifying what these issues are that you would imagine that everyone else is having as well.
Thank you. Yeah. I think it's just a little bit of like, I'm extremely impatient. And so it's like, and I just think things should be more magical and amazing. And if you just ask yourself, well, why do I have to do all of this?
Yes,
you
know,
your day to day, why do I have to do this? Why doesn't this just work? Why doesn't this work well?
Yeah. How many like products come back to somebody just ranting on Twitter being like, is this it? Is this honestly it? Is this as good as it gets?
Because this is garbage and this is terrible. Like, this is garbage. And then I will say another thing too, is that save developers 30 minutes a day and you will have a very, very successful thing. Whatever that thing is, if you save, or really not just developers, save anybody 30 minutes a day. Or you know, with TSDX, it's like saves you an afternoon of config. Yeah, you could use Rollup, you could do it yourself, and you could like go search for the 5-6 config blog posts of TypeScript and Jest and ESLint, right? But or you could run TSDX create and you'd be done, right?
Yeah.
That is the nature of everything I try to do, which is, or you could just import Formic and not have to deal with orchestrating validation on every keystroke properly, right? Or, right, so I like to say, like, remember as kids, you'd get toys and they'd be like battery pack included. And those were the best, right?
Yeah.
How annoying was it when you got the toy and the battery pack was not included and you didn't have batteries in the house? This is catastrophic at that point, right? Like it's horrible. And so like ship stuff with a battery pack included and people will love you for it. And so that's more of my philosophy. It doesn't mean that like you need make this thing like bloated and do everything. But it does mean that like there's a certain level of working out of the box.
There's an elegance to it that I think people miss out on, or like just like they think it works and then that's good enough that it works, but without looking at how much more simple could this process be for the user? What can we abstract or what can we hide away while still making the product not suffer for that? I think it's often ignored.
I had that experience both with PNPM and with Turbo because I didn't change any of my tools. I guess I stopped using NPM and I started using PNPM, but I didn't really have to change a whole lot or adopt or change out anything. And it was just like, I just added it on top and things got magically better. So it's a great experience.
Thank you. This came also from, I guess my philosophy just came from a lot of my agency days. So I used to run a dev shop and yeah. I've seen so many. We used to talk about whether something was a problem or a new problem or a solution. And what I mean by that is, are you inventing a new problem or are you actually providing a solution to something, right? So if you had this big migration, Wes, to XYZ tool, that's actually a new problem.
Right? Yeah.
That seems like it will help, but it's a new problem entirely versus a smooth import process to switch over to PNPM and then one command to import and you're done. And now you've got a new, that's a solution in my mind. So I often think about, are you creating a new problem or actually offering a solution? And the goal is to always actually offer a solution. And 9 times out of 10, that involves some sort of migration and adoption plan that is incremental, that can be done on someone's own schedule and doesn't require a whole sprint planning, right? Like, it'd be a very different story if, Wes, if you were like, well, you know what? I'm going to spend 2 weeks adopting and refactoring my code base to do this, to use this thing that's going to save me 50%, 85% yeah, yeah. of the, you know, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that, right? That'd be outrageous. It'd have to be so much worse than it is, like, right? Or the value would have to be that much higher, right? Versus like, oh, I could just like move my lint command. Sweet. 15 minutes. Let's do that. So that's my sort of take on you know, building things for adoption and building things that for myself too. It's like, and also it doesn't have to be a solution. It has to be a solution.
So this is a new part of this new kind of thing that we're doing, right? This whole Syntax Supper Club. And what we've decided to do is formulate a group of questions that are just going to be the same every episode, but I think kind of interesting questions here. So we're going to ask you several kind of rapid fire questions. We don't have to take too long on these, but I think they're going to be somewhat interesting for our listeners. Wes, do you want to start with the first one?
What computer and keyboard do you use?
I use a MacBook Air M1 maxed out, and I use the Apple keyboard, the full-size keyboard. I've tried I went down the rabbit hole during the pandemic of mechanical keyboards.
Me too.
Like I got super into it and I still like think it's great. And
like
then
this one?
I use that one. and I like really wanted to get like a RamaWorks keyboard and like do it and do the whole thing. And then the reality is that I type faster on the Apple keyboard.
I do
and,
too.
Like, more correctly.
Yes.
And as much as I think it's awesome and they're super stylish and I see them all and I want all these cool stuff, like I was materially less effective with my MX Cherry. I tried browns. I tried blues. I did it all.
For me, it's the fat, so what I really, or it's the tall keys. Like I need
yes,
the short,
yes, yes.
The
I
short
need, I need low profile. Like I'm not going to move my fingers that much. I'm just not. I don't know why, but, and I tried the Keychron, like low profile one, which is like but even that, like, I didn't want to admit it. I was in denial. I was like, no, this is better. This has got to be better. I spent all this money. This has got to be better. I was like in denial. And then like,
look at it.
What
it's
I had
RGB.
To do is I had some blues, the MX blues, which are like really loud. And I have to switch keyboards for my Turbo like demos that I was giving like pitches and stuff. Cause the blues were like so loud. And then when I was recording podcasts, same thing. And like, I switched back and I just like forgot and then realized like, wow, like man. I actually just like the Apple one better. So I really wish. So my goal, my wish is that like I could tweak my Apple one out to be a little cooler, but I don't know.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. I'm the same way. All right. Next question here. What kind of phone do you use?
iPhone. I have the Max.
Beautiful.
Wait. I actually will say I have that for my personal phone and my work phone. I have the Mini. The little one, because I carry two phones. The work phone is the Mini. I like it. It's good. It's some apps are like a little too small, but it's okay. It's a good second phone.
for someone who's never had a job, I'll ask, why carry two phones? So you can turn one off when you're sick of it, or?
Legal reasons around the acquisition. Basically, I keep the devices that are Vercel or Vercel's devices are separate from this other stuff that I work on.
That makes sense. It's because if you come up with the next $1 million idea and you did it on Vercel's phone, then they own it or something like that.
Something like that, but like more nuanced and like probably, first of all, Guillermo would probably invest in it if I did. So like there's that. exactly. There's that.
Cool.
Yeah. Sorry. It's also nice to be able to leave your work and not have it be 24/7. I will say that is also amazing. Just be like, I'm going, on a trip. And
that sounds like it would be great.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. Yeah.
Good. Good. That's a great, great answer. Text editor, theme and font.
VS Code, Operator Mono, SSM. Yeah. And recently I was on Oceanic Next for many years as a theme. I'm now on GitHub Dark, dimmed background. Maybe I just have a regular, actually. I like the GitHub Dark. It just makes sense.
Yeah.
I have this interesting relationship with themes. I don't know about you, but like, I have a relationship with themes. Like when I write certain languages, it has to be a certain theme. I don't know if you guys have that. Like when I write Java or Kotlin, I actually have like IntelliJ White. I don't know why I just have it in my mind. Like, no, and also, but if I write like JavaScript, TypeScript, Go, it's VS. I don't know. I get used to it. Like, in my mind, like there's like separate. There's separate universes. I can't like think about Kotlin in VS Code though. I have to be IntelliJ. So
what do you write in Kotlin? Like you're talking to two guys.
I used to do stuff.
Yeah. Like what kinds of stuff?
Actually, I used to write a bunch of backend work in Kotlin. Kotlin's great. It's like a supercharged TypeScript. Java is like low-key awesome. Yeah, that's my hottest take, and everyone's gonna be like, oh my gosh, Java with like Java. There's flavors of this. So Java with like Spring and bloated and all the classic stuff, right? But Kotlin, and I don't know if you've seen Drop Wizard is amazing, like collection of libraries backend wise, and it's great. Super powered stuff there.
Last time I wrote Java, it was a very long time ago, doing Android work, and I did not know what I was doing. So Kotlin seems like the kind of thing I would love to give a chance now.
It's cool. It's underrated. I'd say it's underrated. I'm not advocating, Jared said Java's amazing, everything in Java. No, I'm just like, it's not as bad as everybody says it is.
And Turbo Repos is written in what, TypeScript?
In Go, actually.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Turbo is written in that native grind. So Turbo CLI is written in Go. There are like Create Turbo is in TypeScript, but Turbo is in Go. It's distributed as an NPM package, even though it's written in Golang. The same way that ESBuild is written in Go and distributed as an NPM package.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. And so how are you able to distribute Go without me having Go installed on my computer? Do you ship it as like an executable, or how does that work?
Yeah, there's binaries that we build per operating system and architecture. And then the Turbo package itself is actually a sort of a shell package. And what it does is it's responsible. It has the operating system packages that are operating in architecture specific packages, of which they're like 12 or something. And it has those optional dependencies. And on most platforms, it will just recognize this optional dependency and install the correct operating system specific version of Turbo. But on platforms that don't, or package managers plus platform combos that don't support optional dependencies properly, it will actually run a post-install script to detect the correct operating system and architecture, and then it will download it from NPM for you. So a little shady, but it's actually how ESBuild works too. They're exactly the same, installed and distributed exactly the same way.
Hmm. Oh, that's really interesting. I'm glad that we asked that. That's cool. These questions, this is the second time we've done this now, but these questions have always surfaced really neat stuff. So I like it.
What is one piece of advice you would have for beginners, people who are just starting out in this industry?
Have a breakable toy.
Nice. Yeah. Love it.
So if you're familiar with this concept, when you're learning stuff, especially this, all this development work. And even as you progress through your career, having a side project that it's a breakable toy that's not crazy ambitious, but is doable and just for you,
yeah,
is immensely important for your ongoing development and career trajectory. The side projects will help you, it will expose you to new problems that just, you know, reading blog posts and Hacker News and Twitter are just not going to expose you to. And it's those that will you'll be able to augment or enhance what you're doing day to day. It is still important to, you know, if you're trying to be a coder, to code every day, if you're trying to be a product manager, to product manage every day, or you know, immerse yourself in what you're doing for sure. Mm-hmm. But especially if you are looking to either change careers or switch focal points, or you want to change industries, or you want to just level up, having this breakable toy, whether that be like as simple as a to-do list or a task, or maybe you share it with your partner or your mom or your whatever, or it's your own little task list or calendar app, or again, small scope, maybe your own CMS or your own course platform, or right, whatever this is, right? And even if it's been done before, I think that's the other thing. People are like trying to like create something new. Like it's okay for these things, for this just to be like your flavor of this, and build it with the best tools or coolest tools or new technology or whatever it is. And then always when you see new technology or new tools, or you read about something on Twitter or whatever, you now have another lens aside from just like work that could be like, oh, that's going to be great for blank, or that could, oh, I could use that as a database, or I could use that as a logging system, or what's that, right? Or and now you have this extra. And if you have more than one breakable toy, even cooler, right?
Yeah.
And the point about it being a toy is it should be small enough in scope where if you break it, it shouldn't matter. Like there shouldn't be like massive consequences, right?
Yeah.
And so that's my advice is to get a breakable toy.
I like that, breakable toy. Next one we have here, I'm going to change it a little bit. The question was, how do you stay up to date? But I'm going to change it to, you can answer that, but I'm more curious, like, how do you know so many languages? You know, like you just Kotlin, Java, you wrote it in Go, TypeScript, like you're all, how do you know so much?
All right. So I'll answer the first one. How do I stay up to date? I'd say mostly a lot of it is Twitter, but less so than it used to be. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
GitHub as well. Less so than it used to be, but just reading and working and immersing myself in these problems. I'd say also getting involved in the community. So even if that's through Twitter, but then going to meetups and hosting meetups and speaking at meetups and conferences. And I know that's been hard with the pandemic, but it is coming back. So just being involved in the community helps you stay up to date, right? I think. So, and then how do I know so much? I don't know if I know anything, to be honest. And the more I don't know anything. But what I do know is I work with awesome people who know a lot now. But to that end, running an agency or your dev shop, well, first starting as a freelancer and then, you know, growing that into an agency, you're exposed to a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You're exposed to a lot of work. And whether that be new projects, old projects, you know, absolute disasters after disaster, you know, replacing systems. I used to joke that between me and my CTO, or former CTO, Ian White, who's now the CEO of ChartHop and founder of ChartHop, an HR platform, that together we had built like a lot of the internet by the end of like our couple of years. We had built an Instagram clone or a Pinterest clone. We built like a news site. We built a membership management platform. We, before Stripe had billing, like I had this like recurring billing system, we built a recurring billing system.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We built like, like an entire like price product CRUD situation. We built a dash, like we built so much stuff. And yeah, that, and so that's paid dividends, over the years.
Awesome.
And then as I was just like turning, teaching myself new stuff, again, project driven learning is the best type of learning, especially for self-taught developers, you know, having that project and whatever that happens to be. And that's always been my sort of, playing with live ammo, if you will. That's been the way I've learned things the best, rather than go sit down and read a textbook on XYZ thing. That's not my style. Let's go build it.
Yeah. That's great advice. We always talk about that too. Like I did freelance for the first 6-7 years of my career. And I was primarily working with agencies and I saw it all. And it's crazy. Sometimes people like have worked at one startup for 5 years and they just, you just can't get through to them to understand like why you might want to do something a certain way, because they've only approached a problem in one tech stack, right? And being working in an agency world, you see literally everything, and you're dipping into all kinds of different stacks and problems and whatnot. It's great. I recommend it. It's tough, but I'm sure you know.
It is tough. There are drawbacks, but it certainly for an I'd say like working in a do a stint at like a dev shop is never a bad move. What about you all? I'm curious where do you stay up to date?
I started my career at a dev shop as well. So that was like big for me, was getting to, you know, if I want to now all of a sudden do SaaS on this project, I can, whatever. Here's a new thing coming out, Stylus. Let me try it on this one. Let me just give it a try. But for me, yeah, I stay up to date a lot on Twitter. One thing that I've been using a lot more lately is GitHub's Explore page or GitHub's own, following. So I follow a bunch of really great devs on GitHub, and you know, if Jared Palmer's liking or starring something, it pops in my feed, and then I can
see it.
Yeah, anyone stars.
I star a lot.
I think between you and Swix, and then Mateo from Fastify, like I get so much out of that. Just the amount of things that other people are looking at or are interested in a little bit. And even if it's not something that I'm like interested in right now, I just kind of goes in a spot in my brain. I put out like a link list of like five interesting projects I found over the week, each week on the Level Up newsletter. So it's like part of my job is to like hunt for that kind of stuff. So I'm always kind of just looking around, I guess.
The podcast as well. Like we have to do a lot of research. We did an episode on Cloud Functions, Edge Compute. What the hell is Edge Compute, right? And we did a little bit of research for that and figure out what it is and what people use it for. And Twitter's great for that. You can often just dip into Twitter and say, hey, what do you use this for, you know?
Yeah, it's great. The stars are great. I forgot how much I star stuff also. Like, yeah, I do star quite a bit. Yeah, I know.
You want to grab the last question there, Scott?
Yeah, last question is... what is one thing that you are excited about in the future of web dev?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm excited for basically to not have to think about config ever again.
Love it.
I'd like to see a world where you just like open an editor and write code and deploy code. And you don't need to think about how it all magically gets to the final state. I think I'm also, so that's like my local development dream, and Turbo will hopefully get us there. I'm very excited about React server components. I'm very excited about React at edge rendering and all this other stuff that's coming. I'm very excited for that. In the nearer term, I'm excited for the even tighter feedback loop between local development and preview URLs and just tightening of that process. I'm very pumped about.
Awesome. I like it. All right. Is there anything else that we didn't mention that you want to make sure we touch upon, or should we move into the last section here?
Do you want to go through, I know we didn't talk much about the like joining Vercel or just like life at Vercel, or I don't know if that's relevant, but we didn't talk
about
that.
Yeah. Let's tell us about that. How does that even happen? Like selling a company of Vercel, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Does Vercel want to buy a podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the way that all went down was kind of fun. So I was going to raise a pretty big seed round for Turbo to be an independent company. And Guillermo was going to invest in that as an angel investor. And we worked together prior on the React docs. So Vercel had and commissioned me and Facebook too, kind of like in tandem, to work on the and prototype the migration of the React.js, official React.js.org from Gatsby 2 Next. And I was staffed with that. So the beta.react.js.org is built on top of some of the initial work that I did. It was completed by, I think it was this.labs, but the initial move was mine, my work. And Guillermo and I worked together on that. And we hit it off immediately. And so that was just like a cool side project. And then fast forward like the following year and I'm doing a raise and G's like, and Guillermo's like, I want to invest and it made sense. And then when it came close to closing the round, Guillermo was like, why don't you just build this up for sale? And then they made an offer and it made sense. And, you know, the rest is sort of history there, but it was an interesting process. to make that decision versus spinning up a company on my own and doing that. But I'm very happy with the decision I made. And then soon I actually joined before Rich Harris did. Rich Harris joined Vercel a month later, but I was in stealth mode, stealth working at Vercel. And then Rich joined, and then Seb joined, and now Malta's joined. We got, and there are already so many people.
It's been a wild, yeah, a wild time for people getting picked up.
And yeah. Vercel's just out there to solve all of our web development problems,
it's
right?
Great.
Like, is there other stuff that you can tell us about that is like coming down the pipe from Vercel? Any sneak peeks?
I mean, the stuff they're doing with Edge is amazing. So they're already in beta, but stay tuned for that. And then there's very cool stuff now with React Server components that is very, very, very soon. There's also, I'll tell you, the Next.js layout RFC is coming. So layouts in Next.js is a big pain point. So that's getting solved.
That was one of my biggest problems with Next.js overall. So happy to see with that.
Yeah. So that's coming. That's like the thing I can share.
Wow, that's really cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. The last section of the podcast would do shameless plugs. So if you have anything you'd like to plug for the audience to go check out, we'd love to hear it.
Sure. So I guess we'll start with just Turbo Repo. So the tool is at turborepo.org, at Turbo Repo on Twitter. I guess Vercel.com, probably the easiest way to deploy a modern front-end web application, whether it be Next.js, Gatsby, Remix, Svelte, Create React App, Docusaurus. Vercel is the best, in my opinion. I'm very biased. Those are my two shameless plug picks. And third pick, totally out of the blue, would be, I just got a new water bottle. Kind of digging it. Yeah. Soma. Have you seen these? Soma?
No. How do you spell that?
Nice.
It's sweet. S-O-M-A. Quality. Just, it's glass. It's kind of got this rubbery thing there. It's pretty neat. I don't know. I got it the other day. Pretty nice. It's a random, like, relevant podcast.
Yeah. We've got that's a sick pick. I like that a lot. Beautiful. Oh, I'm just on their website. They have a nice kettle. Like, you can do that, the pour over with the tiny little kettle that people do. Those are great. You're from New York, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure you've been to some sweet coffee shops then.
joke. Yeah.
Awesome. Jared, thank you so much for coming on. That was super informational, and I'm sure everyone's going to love it. I know I did.
Yeah, I'm going to go out and implement Turbo Repo right now to just give it a try, give it a whirl.
Give it a whirl. See how it goes. We're we're expanding rapidly. Downloads are through the roof, and hopefully that's a good indicator of adoption. And we're stoked. But thanks for having me. I know this was fun. I've been a listener for a long time, and was stoked to get the call out.
Well, thanks, Jared.
All right. Thanks again. I'll talk to you later. Peace.